Good morning, each one gathered out this morning. It's a pleasure to be here on this beautiful Lord's Day morning. It was different to sit in front of church without the young people here singing. They're all at a youth meetings, and that's wonderful, but I do hope they all signed up for chorus because we could have used their singing this morning, and I trust they could bless the chorus that's going to sing. And by the paper, it looks like most of them did, so I believe the chorus will have a joyous sound because you're missing some of that this morning. But it was good to hear everyone else singing. And I was at a place of business. This is just a little, before I get into the message, I was at a place of business this week, and they had this sign behind the desk, and they had written on this whiteboard. It said this: the strength of the team is each individual member, and the strength of each member is the team. And that was written by Phil Jackson. I was just, when I saw it, I thought, that kind of applies to church life, doesn't it? So you just reword it a little bit. I asked the lady, I said, excuse me, I'm taking a picture of that sign because I said, I kind of like that. And I was thinking about it from a congregational standpoint. And so I reworded it a little bit, and I worded it like this: the strength of a congregation is in each individual member. That's what makes Winchester a true light in the community, in the society we find ourselves, and that is when each individual member makes it a point to be Christ-like. And the strength of each member is encouraged by the congregation. And I tried to decide if that was why I came this morning. Is that why you came this morning? Because you knew there was something that you would get here that would be an encouragement and help you to be stronger. And that's what I believe is a fact of church life does for us. Hebrews chapter 10, you can turn there so I can read these words. Basically points this out. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 23-25. Let us hold profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promise. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works. That's the reason we gather together as individuals, because we're to consider one another and continue to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another. And so much the more as you see the day approaching. And that's what we know is coming. We know there's a time coming when time will be no more. And the world's going to be burned up, the Bible says. And we need to be ready for that day. We can see the darkness circling in around us. And society is seemingly getting worse and worse, even though I think it must be like it was before the flood. I believe there was a lot of similarities back then. And God destroyed Rome with the flood. Well, this time he's going to destroy it with fire. But it's important that we continue to gather together, to be broken, to love, and to good works, and to build each other up. That's what we're trying to do this morning. So for a message this morning, you can turn your Bibles to Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is an interesting book. I believe it was written by Moses. And it's kind of a reiteration, in a way, of Exodus. A lot of things you read in Deuteronomy, you can go back and read in Exodus, where God told the children of Israel that this was his laws, this is what he wanted them to do, and how he showed himself. But now we have here in Deuteronomy, we read here in Deuteronomy chapter 1, it says, these be the words which Moses spake unto all Israel on this side Jordan in the wilderness, in the plain over against the Red Sea, between Paran and Tophel, and Laban and Hazeroth and Disahath. And then skip down to verse 3. And it came to pass in the 40th year, in the 11th month, on the first day of the month, that Moses spake unto the children of Israel according to all that the Lord had given him in commandment unto them. So we have in the 40th year, I believe, from when they had left Egypt. And if you remember, they spent 40 years wandering in the wilderness. And this time of wandering in the wilderness is coming to an end. And Moses gathers these people together, and he spake these things. And kind of like, so if you think about when he was in the wilderness, when they were first going to go into Canaan, they had sent men to spy out the land of Canaan. They came back with this awful report. There was a giants in the land. There was no way they could go in. And all besides two men, Josh and Caleb, and they said, no, we'd be well over. Like Travis talked about in the devotions this morning, that we don't have to be afraid because God is on our side. But enough of the people were convinced that they couldn't go that God says, fine, if you aren't going to believe in me, if you aren't going to go, I'm going to make it so you can't. And everyone 20 years old and older will die in this wilderness. So now that is almost past. It's been 40 years. Josh and Caleb, of course, had also lived, but the rest of the people had died. So all we have now is people that were 20 then, so I guess they were 60. So Moses was talking to a group of people that was, I'm going to say, ranged from 60 down to however young, babies, I guess. And he says, I have some things I want to tell you here. And Deuteronomy is interesting. When you read through Deuteronomy, it's numerous places. But then you get back to the last chapter of Deuteronomy is where Moses then died. So perhaps this book was written in the last month of his life. Just something to think about, because so often when people die, you think about some of the last things they said, some of the last things they taught. And so this is what Moses had written. And if you go back to the last chapter of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy 34, we have where Moses died. And Deuteronomy 34, and it says this, and Moses in chapter 34, verse 7, Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. And I imagine there's some 60-year-olds here that wish that that was still them, that they're just never, none of their natural force abated. They just was as strong as he was back when he was young. But anyway, it says he died. In verse 5, it says, So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died here in the land. And verse 8 says, children of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. So the days of weeping and mourning for Moses were ended. And Joshua, son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands upon him, and the children of Israel hearkened unto him, and did as the Lord commanded Moses. And there arose not a prophet since in Israel, like unto Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, and all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh, and to his servants, and to all the land, and all that mighty hand, and in all that great terror which Moses showed in the sight of all Israel. And so we have Moses here, a man that was close to God. And it says there was no prophet like him after that. And I always kind of feel bad for Moses, because Moses died and never entered that promised land. But God had given him commandment, and you can read that in Numbers, I believe, where he was supposed to gather water for the people from that rock, and he went there and he was supposed to speak to the rock. And instead, Moses, in his frustration, and you can only imagine, no school teachers here, I don't believe, but if you're a school teacher and you want people to obey you, or if you're a leader of some group, and you're completely frustrated that sometimes you just do things out of, well, I'm going to say that's what happened to Moses. He's completely frustrated, and he looked at that rock, and God told him to speak, and he instead hit that rock. And it was basically a direct disobedience to what God commanded him. And God had to do something with that. And so he told Moses, because of that, you will not enter the promised land. And it's kind of a reminder to me, and that is that as leaders, whether you're leading your home, whether you're leading the classroom, whether you're leading the church, whatever it is, obedience. God is still looking for obedience. And he will judge those who just sidestep it and say, it doesn't matter, I'm going to do my own thing. And even in the harder things of life, where we just, out of frustration, you do something. Moses was punished for that. So it's kind of a little bit of a backdrop. Turn now to Deuteronomy chapter 5. This is where my inspiration came from for this morning. Deuteronomy chapter 5. We have Moses here talking to these 60-year-olds and younger, reminding them of what God had asked of them and the laws he had given them. And we have the commandments here in verses 6 down through 15. Basically the same commandments that God would have given back in Exodus. Moses kind of reiterating them. Down to verse 21, I guess. And then starting at verse 22, I want to read the words here. These words the Lord spake unto all your assembly in the mount, out of the midst of the fire, of the cloud, and of the thick darkness, and a great voice, and he added no more. And he wrote them in two tables of stone, and delivered them unto me. And it came to pass, when ye heard the voice out of the midst of the darkness, for the mountain did burn with fire, that ye came near unto me, even all the heads of your tribes and your elders. And ye said, behold, the Lord our God has showed us his glory and his greatness, and we have heard his voice out of the midst of the fire. We have seen this day that God does talk with man, and he liveth. Now therefore, why should we die? For this great fire will consume us if we hear the voice of the Lord our God any more, then we shall die. For who is there of all flesh that hath heard the voice of the living God speaking out of the midst of the fire as we have and lived? And then they said to Moses, go thou near and hear all the, that the Lord our God shall say, and speak thou unto all that the Lord our God shall speak unto thee, and we will hear it and do it. So the people are telling Moses, listen, this is too scary, and if you picture with me this, you can go back to Exodus and read. Maybe we'll do that. Go back to Exodus chapter 19. We have this powerful sight. Exodus chapter 19, verse 16. And it came to pass on the third day, and this is when God came down to the mountain, Mount Sinai. And it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunders and lightnings, and a thick cloud upon the mount, and the voice of the trumpet exceeding loud, so that all the people were in the camp trembled. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at another part of the mount. And Mount Sinai was altogether on smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire, and the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. And when the voice of the trumpet sounded long and waxed louder and louder, Moses spake, and God answered him by a voice. And the Lord came down upon the top of Mount Sinai. And the Lord called Moses up to the top of it, and Moses went up on the mount. So we have this mountain that there was lightnings and thunders and this noise, and the voice of the trumpet kept getting louder and louder and louder. And turn over to chapter 20, we have it again. Verse 18, and all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. And they said unto Moses, speak thou with us, and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die. So you have these people exceedingly fearful because of this great God that they were seeing his power. And because of this, and because of seeing this great God and seeing his power, they told Moses here in verse 27 of Deuteronomy 5, go thou, and whatever your God shall speak unto thee, we will hear it and do it. And it says this in verse 28 of Deuteronomy now, chapter 5. And the Lord heard the voice of your words when ye spake unto me, and the Lord said unto me, I have heard the voice of the words of this people which they have spoken unto me. They have well said all that they have spoken. So God says, this people, they have said right. What they said is right. And then they have spoken well. And then he says in verse 29, oh, that there was such an heart in them. Oh, that there was such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always. So these people had the right words. But God is saying, oh, that there was such a heart in them to do it. And this morning, that's what I've titled my message this morning, is More Than a Spoken Profession. In life, there's many things that we can say and we can promise. And these people promised God. They said, Moses, you go up there and when you come down and tell us, we'll just do it. But God watched these people, and he watched how many times that they didn't live what they spoke. And this morning, we don't live in the Old Testament era. We don't have Moses as our mediator. Instead, we have Jesus Christ as a mediator. For there was one God and one mediator between God and man, the man Jesus Christ. So we live in a little different times, but we serve the same God. Malachi 3:6a says this, for I am the Lord and I change not. And we serve the same God that came down. And I wondered if God came today to America, if he came down onto, well, we don't really have mountains here, but he came down here on one of these hills in West Virginia, we'll call it a hill, and it was dark on top, and it was thundering, and it was lightning, and this noise of a trumpet got louder and louder, and there was a fire up there burning, and there was smoke rolling out of the top of this mountain like a great furnace, and we were gathered together, and God spoke, whether there would be a different fear of God that we would have than what we have this morning. I wonder how that would affect us. I think in some way that it would create in the people gathered here, maybe the people gathered in the people in the community. I believe it would be a different type of a fear there that we don't experience in our New Testament age. But it is the same God. And he still cares about whether or not we have this wonderful lip profession, and yet we don't have actions and a life to back it up. Because that's what makes it real. Oh, that there was such a heart in them. More than just saying the right thing. Oh, that they lived it. And we have that taught in the New Testament. Let's go to Titus chapter 1. Have fairly similar words, but we had in Deuteronomy, a little bit different, but Titus 1, Paul writing to Titus in verse 15, it says this, unto the pure all things are pure, but unto them that are defiled and believing is nothing pure, but even their mind and their conscience is defiled. And then it says this in verse 16, they profess that they know God. They have the right words. They're speaking the right profession. But in works they deny him, being abominable and disobedient unto every good work, reprobate. Now turn over to 1 John chapter 2. My little children, these things write unto you that ye sin not. And if any man sin, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. And he is a propitiation for our sins, and not for ours only, but also for the sins of the whole world. And hereby we do know that we know him if we keep his commandments. He that saith, I know him, and keepeth not his commandment, is a liar. He that speaks right, but doesn't live right, doesn't keep what his commandments, doesn't follow the example of Jesus, doesn't live according to the word of God, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoso keepeth his word, in him verily is the love of God perfected. Hereby know we that we are in him. He that saith, he abideth in him, ought himself also so to walk even as he walked. There's a connection that happens when what we speak and what we live lines up. And there's a truth that's shown to the world about us, and there's a light that is cast forth that can't be put out, I'm going to say, because it becomes real. And then the opposite is also true, where people that maybe have a good profession, but in life, they live a life that is anything but that. And I have a little example of that. It's probably been a little over a year ago. I did work for a customer, and he had told me about some buildings he had built beforehand, and he talked very negative about this individual, how the man was a bad businessman, and he didn't build what he said he was going to build. The trusses ended up being a lot less load-bearing than what they were supposed to be. It said it had just a horrible story about this builder. And he said about how he had moved in the area for a while, and then this fellow left. And he'd built a couple other buildings in the area, and he had nothing but bad to say about it. And his name, this man told me, he was a unbelieving man, I'm going to say. I don't believe he was a church-going man anyway. And he basically said he left his taste in the community. Everybody knows him. And I didn't know anything about this fellow at all. Didn't recognize the name. But this past week, I was at a place of business in Slainsville. And I was talking to a man that goes to Slainsville, and I'm not sure how we got talking about a fellow in the area that built a turkey house. But anyway, I think he told me he just finished up building plumbing some chicken houses. But anyway, and I asked him if he knew about these people that had done some work for. And I said, what about the, and he says, well, you know the fellow that built his last barns? He said, he made a terrible stink in the community. And I says, well, they told me about him. Well, he said, the ironic thing was, he said, he went to our church for a while. And he said, he made me almost embarrassed by the amount of, by his profession, his lip profession, the amount of time, amount of good things he had to say about God and what God was doing in his life. And he said, I thought to myself, I can learn some lessons from him. And I'm not saying that maybe he couldn't have learned some lessons from him. We can learn lessons from those kind of people. But the point is the man had a profession, but he didn't have a life to back it up. In the end, he ended up leaving, and he lives in another state now. And from what this man told me, he's not allowed to come back into the state because of his business dealings. He's not in West Virginia. But his life was distasteful. You see, he had a profession, but he didn't have a life to back it up. And that is so sad when people get that confused and think it's all about what we say. It's not all about what we say. There's a lot that has to do with how we live. And I thought about in comparison to that, and I'm not here promoting my uncle's butcher shop, but I have an uncle in Hagerstown that does butchering. And when I moved, his last name's the same as mine, my last name. So when I moved to this area and I started to do business in this area, first man I met was an excavator, and he immediately linked my name with that man's name and says, "Are you related to this fella in Hagerstown?" And I said yes, and he only had good things to say about this business, about number one, their good food, and I know food goes a long ways in people, so some people, if it's food, they're happy. But not only was it the food, he said the people are honest, and he said we just like to deal with them. And I've been, since I've moved down here, I've been an hour west of here. I've been an hour east of here. And every prayer I go, if somebody links that name, I'm happy to say I'm related, because there's nothing but good to say about that man. Now, I don't know how much that man has said about the Lord to these people, but there's a life, and there's something that's being shown to people that deal with him that say, here's a man that has something, here's a man, a business that offers something that's different than a lot of other businesses. And it just, to me, it just, when I was reading through Deuteronomy and I read these verses, it just hit hard to me again how much it doesn't matter what you say. Actions speak louder than words, right? That's what we always, it doesn't matter what's coming out in a way, what's coming out of your mouth, as far as you can have all kinds, you can have a glowing testimony, you can talk about your salvation experience. And there's a lot of things, and it's good to speak about those things, and it's good to have a testimony. I'm not here saying this morning that we should be quiet about those things, but my point is that does your life back it up? Or does it raise questions? Like that man that was doing shiesty business in West Virginia. So I decided this morning for the remainder of the message just to look at a man's life, and it's maybe a little strange man to go to, but in Genesis we have a man. We don't hear a lot of his words, but he obviously lived a life that was above reproach, and people that knew this man, people that this man did business with, people that this man served, realized that there was a power there that couldn't be gotten away from. And this man is Joseph. You can turn to Genesis chapter 37. I'd like to take a couple of principles from the life of Joseph that we can use in order to help our walk, match, or talk, maybe I'll say. So we have here in Genesis 37 about Joseph. It starts out with Joseph here being 17 years old. And he's feeding the flock, and most of us here know the story of Joseph and about how that his father had different wives, and Joseph was from one of the wives he loved well, and because of that, Jacob had some favoritism to Joseph, and that's favoritism. I'll just put it this way: favoritism should never be in our families, and that is our children. We must have equal love, and I know that. I think every child here probably feels like that there's somebody else in the family that's loved better than them. I think that's pretty universal. And I even know what that feels like, even though my siblings would all tell me that I was the favorite. So, but in this chapter, in this story, it says in verse 3, "And Israel loved Joseph more than all his children." So it was a reality that Joseph was extra loved. And I don't know why that was, other than maybe it's because of his mother. But I also believe that Joseph was a man of character, and that's what I have my first point at, is that Joseph was a responsible young man. Here was a young man, 17 years old, that his father called him in verse 13 and 14 and said this, "And Israel said unto Jacob, Do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said unto him, Here I am. And he said, Go, I pray thee, and see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem." So we have Joseph was a man of character enough that his father knew that he could send him somewhere and he could trust him, that he would get a report and he would come back with a report, and he could believe it. And hopefully, we don't have any 17-year-olds here this morning, but my thought is that a 17-year-old will speak louder, but be by peering responsibility and being able to be told that I need you to go here and do something and report back with whatever that findings is. And if they do that, and they're careful in that responsibility, that may speak louder than any words they could ever say about who they believe and what they believe in and who they're serving. If their life and their commitment to be responsible to whoever's in charge of them is carried through. And that's what we have Joseph doing. He went. Of course, he never returned home. We know that his brothers caught him there and ended up throwing him in the pit. And then the merchants came along and they sold Joseph to these merchants. And I had to wonder what the brothers told the merchants. If you're going to get money for something, you have to have a sales pitch, right? So I don't know if Joseph heard any good things whenever he was coming out of the pit and getting sold to the merchants or not. Maybe he suddenly found out that he was wonderful. I'm not quite sure, but it was just interesting that they sold him to the merchants. And Joseph went with the merchants. He went down here to Egypt. Went over in chapter 39. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt. And Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hand of the Ishmaelites. So we have Joseph being sold, and he goes down here to Egypt. And then the second thing I have here for Joseph, and that is he was a man of diligent service. We have this in verse 3. The master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand, and Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put in his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And he knew not aught that he had save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. So I can only imagine Joseph's feelings as he was took down here to Egypt and he was sold. And so he was in a strange land. Hated by the only ones he knew that sold him. And yet God was with him. And it's mentioned numerous times how that God was with him and caused everything that he did to prosper. And I guess this morning we could perhaps think that, Joseph, his life, the reason it panned out the way it did, and I believe that God did have a plan. And he knew that he needed Joseph for a certain purpose. But I also believe that Joseph was a man of diligent service, because it says that in verse 3, that the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man. Verse 3, and his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph was also a man of service, though. He was doing things. The Lord didn't prosper what Joseph didn't do. It says he prospered what Joseph did to. So we have Joseph, even in a bad circumstance, out of his control, but he was there serving in this captain realized it. He realized that there was something about this man that was different than any other slaves that he had. I believe this man had more slaves, but there's something about this man that was different, and how you could take a slave, somebody that you had bought from some random passerby that you bought this slave off of, and you could entrust everything you had into him. I mean, we wouldn't even do that. You would have to have and maybe Joseph was there for a year or two before that happened, but something about Joseph just made Potiphar say, I can trust him with everything and I know it'll be okay. Wonderful testimony. And I really don't think that Joseph could have said enough good words to convince anyone to allow him to do that. I believe it was because of his carefulness of his life. And I think this morning that you can have a lot of good things come out of your mouth, but a carefulness of life and simply being diligent in whatever you're called to do, it doesn't, there's many, many people here that work for other people, and we live in a world where you hear about the frustrations of people that hire young people and they can't get them away off their phones, they can't get them, and I'll just say this morning that if you're an employee and you're working for someone, even if you're simply employed by a person to do work for them and you're wasting time, you can say a lot of good things about the Lord, but if they're like, but he's stealing me, he's stealing from me because of his work ethic, he's not doing what he's agreed to do, he's those words won't mean anything. And I believe that's the reason Joseph prospered so well, is because he had a life that simply lived, and it was real. And then the third thing I see in Joseph is he was a man of integrity, and we have this in chapter 39, verses 7 to 19, where his master's wife tempted him to commit fornication. And I believe that for a young man, and how old Joseph was at this time, that this temptation, I believe, was real. He was away from anyone he knew. He was away from what he would call home. He was in a strange country, and he probably wondered what his future would even hold. And before him, he had this temptation, and he could have thought within himself, nobody else will know. No one else will see. I won't tell anyone. But instead of yielding to that temptation, we have him fleeing. And before he fled, he said this: how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Now, that was a lip profession, but his life backed it up. He did exactly what he said. He says, how can I do this sin, this wickedness and sin against God? Of course, they got him thrown into prison. And we have Joseph in prison down in verses 21 to 23. And again, Joseph's in another bad situation. And it said, but the Lord was with Joseph. Verse 21 of chapter 39. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all of the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did thereof, he was a doer of it. And the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him. And that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. Again, we have this man still of man of integrity. And he was cast down into prison. And I had to wonder when he went down there whether he told them the truth. In a way, I think he must have, because men would do that. We would go down there and say, listen, I was put in here unjustly. And I believe he must have told the keeper that. But apparently, his life and his the way he handled himself, it became evident to the keeper that this was actually right. Because why else would he taken all the prisoners in that prison and put them in charge of another prisoner? You just don't do that kind of thing. I mean, it'd been a sure way to have everyone get out of jail. And here he was. He just put it in Joseph's hand because he knew that Joseph's life represented something that he knew he could trust in. And it's just another wonderful testimony of Joseph, even when he was found himself in a bad situation, he continued to serve. And it says in verse 23, in that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. There again, it wasn't the Lord simply making things happen that Joseph wasn't involved in. It said Joseph was busy doing things. He's busy being of service to other people. The fourth thing I have here, and that is he cared more about others than just about himself. So we have him in prison here in chapter 40. He's in prison for no reason. He's in charge of prisoners serving them, and yet aware of their countenance. We have these butler and the baker being thrown into prison, and Joseph was in charge of the ward. And says here in verse 6, and Joseph came in and looked upon them in the morning, and behold, they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of the Lord's house, saying, why look ye so sadly today? So here we have a man that had his own troubles, he had his own griefs, he had his own problems, and he was looking at the needs around him. He looked at these men and said, so what's your problem? And they told him that they had their problem, and he's like, well, and they said, we have dreamed a dream in verse 8, and there is no interpreter. And Joseph said unto them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me, I pray you. And so they told the dream, and Joseph was quick, even in that stage, in that he's like, God is the answer to your problem. That's essentially what Joseph was telling those men. And in spite of that, those men decided they would tell Joseph their dream. And then Joseph, left Joseph there the meaning of that dream. And Joseph told him what that was going to mean. And he said, but now I want you to do something for me. And I found this interesting that it seems like that's the first time Joseph told these men while he was in prison. So he was obviously in prison. He was tending these men. They had this dream. And Joseph asked about their problems. Then he says, this is the answer. God gave me the answer to your dream. But he says, when you get out of prison, he says, remember me. And then he told him, I was sold innocent, didn't do anything wrong, but I was sent down here and I was bought. Now I'm in prison, innocent here as well. And I think it was a powerful testimony to those men that here was a man that they could see was serving in spite of his difficult circumstances. And yet, of course, we know that he got out of, the butler got out of prison, and he totally forgot Joseph. So Joseph spent another 2 years in prison. Until Pharaoh, and that's my last point, and that is Pharaoh refused to take credit that belonged to God to himself. We have here in chapter 41 where Pharaoh had dreamed a dream, and he couldn't figure out what to do with his dream, and the butler says, hey, there's a man in prison that explained to my dream, and it was true, and maybe I'll call him, maybe he can explain your dream. And it says in verse 14, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh and said, it is not in me. It's not me that can explain this dream. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And we see that at different times, that Joseph would say, God is the one, God is the one. But his life matched it up. And so we have Joseph then explaining his dream. And we have Pharaoh in 39 saying, and Pharaoh said unto Joseph, as for as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And we have this boy that was sent at 17 years old down into Egypt. I don't know how many years he spent in prison, but here we are 13 years later, and Pharaoh is looking at this, again, a stranger, this man just pulled out of prison, and he's saying, because of his character, because of I see God and what God can do through him, he said, I'm going to trust everything I have, second in command in my kingdom. And I believe, again, that Joseph could have said many good things, and he could have explained his whole plight and tried to get people on his side, but simply his life and the people could see that God was with him is what made people honor him and want to turn things over to him. And it was so much so that it's interesting whenever Joseph brought his father and his brothers down there to Egypt. And when they came as strangers to Egypt, whenever Pharaoh and Pharaoh's servants heard that this was Joseph's father and his brothers, that they were glad. They were glad these strangers came. And they said, give them the best of the land. What a testimony. Is that what is radiating from my life, that someday somebody will say that have the same last name maybe, and they'll say, are you related to so-and-so? And he was honest. He was fair. He was a godly man. It's just what his life was and is. And this morning, that is my question to you and to myself. And that is, does our hearts match our lips? 1 Peter 2, 11-12 says, dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conversation. And conversation there means manner of life, conduct, and behavior, honest among the Gentiles, or we could say unbelievers, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God. There's nothing else to say. But there's nothing, may we live a life that what we proclaim and what we speak about God and our love for him and the testimony we give of our repentance, of our renewed heart,
that our life would back it up. People say, yes, I believe it. It's what I see. It's the way he lives. May each of us continue to aspire to live according to the commandment, the example of Jesus Christ, and according to the commandments that's found in his word, so that we can show what following Christ looks like and not just say what it looks like. Let's kneel for prayer.